Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Chris.
And this is episode 480, Origins and Spiel des Jahres Award Nominations. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we are back, and while Anthony is away, Chris has come join us to play. Hey Chris.
Hey, how's everything going?
Doing well, Chris. And Chris, remind the audience, you've been here before, you've been here for years, it's not just a comeback. Where are you from, Chris? What are you doing?
Oh, so I'm Chris Rodriguez, I'm in New York, and I run a nonprofit organization called Board Games for the Better, where we use board games to help children and families that are going through difficult times, trying to give them a bit of mental relief, stress relief by using board games.
Excellent. Yeah, Chris has been with us for quite a couple of episodes, so you've heard about him before, and an amazing charity to get games to the table in places and with people who may not have that kind of access. So Chris, if they want to hit you up as far as learning how to donate, learning out where you're making your donations, where you're learning to teach games, what conventions you're at, where should they go?
So they can find us at boardgamesforthebetter.org. And on there, you'll see our news feed where you can see what conventions we're going to be at. You can see all the good we're doing. We just had a big donation go out to Texas to help some veterans that are dealing with mental health issues. So they're going to be using games for play therapy. And we also had a couple of game days with a domestic violence shelter and people who are in assisted living facilities. So we've been really kind of going all over the place recently.
Excellent. All right. Games are out there doing some good stuff. And again, we thank you and Aaron for doing such great work out there. But before we get into all that, let's talk about some unfortunate things that are happening in the tabletop industry. Chris, I don't know if you know this, but two game companies kind of made unfortunate announcements recently. First up, Game Brewer. Have you ever bought anything from Game Brewer? Do you know Game Brewer?
No, I don't think I do.
They're a small game company that came out a couple of years ago. And they had some decent games, but they had a really weird way of selling them. They had a subscription that you had to like purchase into, and then you get a percentage off. And then based upon how many games that you purchased through their Kickstarters. There was opportunities to get additional discounts. So they just recently announced that they're closing shop. They recently had Bone Wars and Algae Inc. And then there was a Stroganoff Big Box for their final release. But financially, they were not doing well. And they're stating that they have over 9,000 games left, which is quite sad. It's always hard and sad to see, you know, a company out there, especially a small company out there, struggling to kind of make through. It's a very difficult market, and they came in a really bit of an odd time. I appreciate that they were trying to do something a little different, but I think on the whole, their games were, I wouldn't say like just a little bit more expensive than the average game. And I'm talking about, you know, now we're in the day of age where everything's kind of expensive. You know, everything's $110 like we were talking about before the episode. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, anything that, like, I feel like your average game is like $110, $100. Anything that's like $99.99 is like, ooh, that's a sale. Like,
yeah, and again, I really liked a lot of their games. Anthony, I know, picked up a bunch of them. Gugan, I think, was one of their first releases. This was way back in 2018, but Gentes, Paris was something I really liked. Again, I wanted to pick these games up, but they always felt like they were 20 or 30% more than they kind of should be. They re-released the Palaces of Carrara, which is a favorite game of mine. I actually have the German release. So, you know, pour one out for our friends here, because it's kind of sad. Hopefully whatever was in process gets sent to them, because again, I think they've had a lot of good games, some problems across the way, and now they're giving their goodbyes. So if you currently have a game campaign with Game Brewers, please check them out and see what's happening next.
Or I guess also if there's any game there that you were interested in getting, because I've heard about Paris. And I heard it was actually pretty good.
Same.
So I might want to pick up a copy before they're all gone.
Yes, true. Because again, once it's out, it might take quite some time for someone to reacquire the license.
Yeah.
So this might be a time to check out their website and check out the discounts. Also want to mention Atomic Mass Games gave an update. Fantasy Flight originally produced the wonderful X-Wing Miniatures game. Chris, have you ever played the X-Wing Miniatures?
I have, and I heard this news.
No.
This was really sad when I saw it this morning. Yeah, it was X-Wing and Armada, I believe. X-Wing right?
and Armada, yeah.
Really solid games.
And it was sad because this was the miniature games. It was basically little Star Wars X-Wings and small fighters with the X-Wing miniatures. And then Armada came out with the big capital ships. And then all the little mini ships were kind of shrunk a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you had these massive battles at the table. And Fantasy Flight was initially doing a really good job kind of getting the word out and having organized play. I remember they were at Barnes & Noble at one point, which was shocking.
Yeah.
But nobody at Barnes & Noble knew how to play the game, because I went to multiple Barnes & Noble around the New York City, New Jersey area. And everyone was like, it's a game. It's got ships and you roll the dice and it shoots. And I'm like, yeah, I guess it does. It's like, I couldn't get the heart together just to go, look, I know how to play the game, man. Like, I get it. You know, like, ugh. Well, X-Wing
was an amazing game.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, I picked up late. I mean, I picked up originally a couple ships, and then a friend was selling their collection. I was like, all right, I'll take that. I've never been able to get back to the table. And Armada came out, and I was like, Armada's beautiful, and I want this. But I already have X-Wing miniatures. And if Armada had come out first, I would have bought that for certain. Or if they came out at the same time, it would definitely have been Armada. But yeah, they're stopping production. They're stopping development. They're stopping support. So, yeah, who knows what the future might bring, but it seems like Asmodee, because they're the overarching company here, announced that this is not happening anymore. They're shutting it down, bro.
I think my guess is because they're trying to like invest everything into Shatterpoint, which is like their new Star Wars miniatures endeavor. So I feel like which is weird to me, because I feel like it's just a few years back that they did like a revamp of X-Wing.
Yes.
Where they came out with like the 2.0. Yes. I think it's like when Force Awakens came out.
Yes.
They were like really trying to make a big push for it. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was doing pretty well. I see it in every game store. I see people constantly buying ships up and playing, like whenever I go to conventions. So I'm just really surprised that they're just kind of cutting this off.
Yeah, the ships were so good that you could just display them. Even if you didn't play the game, they were really quality miniatures, unlike Star Trek Attack Wing, which was really bad paint jobs and really poor as far as that's concerned. But yes, they have Asmodee came out with a statement, and they said that they are still strongly supporting Star Wars Shatterpoint and Star Wars Legion, which also seems a little weird to me. Those two games seem to kind of fit the same bucket.
Yeah.
Miniature games on at the table, but maybe they're seeing, since Warhammer is doing so well, that they just want to kind of focus there. I like the I like that kind of attack wing kind of system that's in play, that flight path. Yeah. So I'm kind of bummed out about it. I like the ships.
Yeah, sad to see that game go.
Yeah. So two things changing in the company. Keep up to date. Hopefully your collection is in good shape, or maybe you have an opportunity to pick up some extra ships as people start dumping their collection. Sadly, this does happen. If you're not familiar with this, does happen in history.
X-Wing? No, keep your collection. You can still, it's great to for table play.
Yeah. It's the organized play people, I think, that really are hurt by this.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, at least like they'll still have the community that they've built up all these years. Sure. So if they still want to play the game, like, they have people who are going to be just as passionate as them.
Absolutely. On the good side, we want to announce some of the things that's going on with us. We've mentioned this last week, and this is a big thing for us. Board Game Academics, our scholarship, our academic brethren out there, we're putting out an annual academic conference in which we will have a keynote speaker, panel presentation, and then most importantly, we will have all the people that will be in our upcoming journal present their scholarship, research, practitioner work, any from any particular field. They'll be presenting at Dex Light on July 4th, 2024. It's a $15 registration fee. If you're in person, that's incredibly cheap for an academic conference. And also, you get to attend all the Dex Light board game events that Thursday night. Then there's also a discount rate if you want to also attend Dex Light for the rest of the weekend. So the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there'll be a board game convention, tabletop convention. Not just board games, but role-playing games, a whole bunch of great miniature games out there. So a lot of great opportunities to learn more about upcoming cutting-edge research in tabletop gaming, and then a lot of fun playing tabletop games together. So check out our website, boardgameacademics.com/register, and you'll find all the information about the in-person or the virtual attendance. So this way you can connect with us, see what's going out there in the industry, and you can check out the agenda. So all the papers that will be presented, including a designer's insight, are listed on the website right now. So check it out, get more information, and we'll tell you more about this next week. All right, so that's a little bit of what's going on out there. Again, Board Game Academic Convention, Dex Light, happening big, a lot of fun out there. So we've been talking about a lot of fun stuff, Chris. There's a lot of good things going out there. And since Anthony is away, one of the things that I wanted to make sure that everyone could do at the table is let us know what they're actually getting to the table, because there's a lot of good games out there. And it's not just us, but it's a lot of fun people out there as well. So Chris, we're turning to Facebook and our question of the week, which is, hey, Anthony's gone this week. What did you play? And how do you rate it? Because someone's got to do all the work that Anthony does this week.
All right, so what do we have for answers?
Oh, we got a lot of great stuff this week. I maybe even too much. So first up from Lucia, Underwater Cities for the first time as a birthday gift based on our recommendations. Wow, thank you. And Race for the Galaxy, second edition, great while traveling. I absolutely agree. They rated both of them a buy. Underwater Cities, Chris, you played that, right?
I wanted to play Underwater Cities. Yeah, played Evacuation, and it made me want to play Underwater Cities even more. Race for the Galaxy, by far my favorite card game. I will always recommend that to everybody.
Same. They're both absolute buys for me. Scott mentioned Lacrimosa, a definite buy. We were just talking about this before the podcast.
Yep. Mm-hmm. One of the few games that are like music themed that are like popular right now.
Yes. Matt mentioned Five Tribes and Wingspan. Would rate both as buys, seeing as I've already bought them and they survived multiple cullings.
Huge fan of Five Tribes. I don't know if I would recommend it to everybody because a lot of analysis paralysis in that game. But if you're like already in the hobby, yeah, definitely jump in on Five Tribes. And I think it's Wingspan is just always just a great like intro game for people.
Yeah, the thing with Five Tribes is the board completely resets. So by the time the more players you have, the more the board resets. So
yeah, like you can't plan for what you want to do, you know, 3-4 you know, players ahead of you, because by the time it gets to you, the map's going to be completely different.
100%. And Wingspan, again, you could say it's overhyped, but I played it last week, surprisingly enough, with the European expansion, and I'm like, still gets to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Dave, our Game Master Dave, he played Agricola, had fun. It was a close game. He would rate it a play. It used to be a buy for him, but there's so many great worker placement games that have come and gone since release that one might say there are better ones out there. Wow, shots fired, Chris.
Yeah, so I got Agricola, and it took me almost a year to actually end up playing it after I got it. And it's good, and I see why people like it so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like now a lot of games have become a little bit less mean. Yes. So I feel like Agricola is definitely a game from like an older generation of board gaming, sure, where, you know, like you took something away from somebody, you took that worker placement spot, like in Agricola, like you could derail their entire game.
Yes.
Whereas you have games now like Feast for Odin, where you know, 30 different places you can pick. If they took the one you want, you've got other options. So like it's cool to see how much worker placement has changed since then. But I feel like that's more like is it your cup of tea to be that mean during a game? And I feel like that kind of determines whether or not it's a buy or a play for you.
Yeah. There's certainly some upfront investment with it, because if you don't know the cards that are being drafted, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
And I've been there where I'm just like, what deck is this? Oh, it's this deck. And I'm like, oh, I don't want this card. This card has a major negative despite the benefit it has. I'm going to pass this. And then the next card's like, I will remove all negatives from cards. I'm like, oh no. And then seeing someone put together that combo, and I'm just like, oh, why? I didn't know that was in there.
Yeah. It's a game that definitely, like, if you're playing with somebody who's more experienced, they're just going to trample on you.
It's very difficult. Sometimes even when you don't do the draft and you get random cards, someone got a good combination and you're kind of in for a bad spot. It is misery farming. I will say it's been a bit since I've gotten it to the table again, because I think you need to let every player at the table go through the deck of cards before it gets drafted. And there's a lot of cards, because there's minor and major improvements, and there's the occupations and stuff. And there's a lot of stuff in there.
Especially in the beginning, where it's like your improvement cards that you're like holding on to, like your jobs, like you make that decision at the beginning of the game.
Yes.
And if you don't know what's going on, you're just going to be lost from the get-go.
I will say, if I look back at all the great game moments I have, Agricola is in there, because when you're able to feed your family and score points in a meaningful way, you feel like you did everything.
Yeah, but what a weird theme to have in a game where it's like, was it a good turn? Well, I fed my family this year, so I guess so.
I literally had that. I had that whole thought process. I was like, I'm not going to be able to feed my family. And then I fed them for that year without any negative bonuses, and I was like I had saved the whole galaxy. So the theme works. It's misery farming. It makes sense. To run on, David mentioned PAX Premier Second Edition. He said that he restarted a new Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion campaign solo. Excellent. Anthony will appreciate that. And he had forgotten how much he enjoyed the game and the clever card mechanics. It's a dungeon crawl Euro. Absolutely, David. 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Nathan mentioned finally getting Great Western Trail to the table. Definitely lives up to the hype. Just wish that he'd gotten it sooner. Great game. I would recommend not playing with the expansion. It really lengthens the game to an uncomfortable level. Maybe some of the new versions are even better than that.
I've been wanting to play Great Western Trail for so long. I just keep hearing how great it is to ship cows, and I just really want to give it a shot.
I would try the Australian one. Ship sheep. Sheep are better.
Ship sheep.
Yeah, I do think the game's a little overhyped. I think it's an okay game. I think the later updated versions are better. And I think that one expansion to the original base game just lengthens it too much. I think they do better. I'm being honest. Try the cheaper of it. It's really a thing. Bryant mentioned being hooked on Arkham Horror LCG at the moment, which I totally agree. I'm not a Cthulhu fan, but I played that and I was like, oh, I just want to keep playing this.
I feel like that's one of the few card games I can never get into.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've tried getting it to the table a few times, and I feel like every time we start, the interest just wanes. It's a hard rules teach to kind of get through. Because I've played other living card games that Fantasy Flight's put out.
Yeah.
And like things like Netrunner, like I've always been like really into. For some reason, Arkham Horror, it's just trying it out, it's like, meh, like the deck building doesn't seem as interesting to me. The mechanics of like how you move around, maybe it is just the Cthulhu theme also that just kind of tends to put me off.
I will say, like I said, I'm not a Cthulhu fan, and I've said this many times, but the game does works really well. I mean, Lord of the Rings, the card game, is one of my favorites. This Arkham Horror plays better because I think it plays into the story a lot better. Like the choices you make have a much bigger difference as far as how the story plays out.
Okay.
I know Anthony likes Marvel Champions better, which came out later, but I think the story with Arkham Horror is surprisingly good. Again, I do think on some level you got to be cool with the Arkham Horror stuff because it's just, it's a relentless kind of theme.
Once they put Cthulhu and Kemet, I was like, I think I'm done with
Cthulhu. Oh yeah, I have that. I don't know. I was not. Everybody was unhappy about that. Do you remember that campaign?
Yeah, I remember that. And the second they put that stretch goal out, people were like, "Don't put Cthulhu in my game.
I don't want Cthulhu in my game." And they were like, "Ooh, we made a big mistake here," but they fixed it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty decent. And finally, David here talks about Zombie Kids Evolution with the kids, of course. Although I think it's fine without the kids. I'm just saying. It's excellent for the kids, with kids, opening new envelopes, keeping everyone excited, applying stickers, unlocking achievements, keeping them engaged. Jam Jar of Judgment, full, okay, which equals a buy. So he's going to give a buy on all of those, which is excellent. I don't know if you played any of those, Chris.
I actually gave my nephews Zombie Kids.
Oh, nice.
They absolutely loved it. And then we ended up getting them, I think like a year later, Zombie Teens, which is the sequel.
Nice.
And they loved it too. And then I remember looking to see, like, is there zombie adults? And then I was like, I guess it's just Zombicide at that point.
And finally, from our Patreon, one of our Patreon producers, Drew, mentioned this past week, he was able to get an oldie but a goodie to the table for the first time. Manhattan Project Energy Empire, a delightful worker placement tableau building game, balance engine building game, waste management, and resource conversion. The tableau building makes developing your engine interesting and variable with each play. Aesthetics are good, and iconography is easy to understand for a midweight Europe. I'm going to rate it a buy. Chris, have you played this?
I haven't. I've heard of it before, but I've never seen it like in a store for even for me to buy.
I don't know if it's still in print. I have a copy. Anthony and I love this game separately. We came across this game separately. It's in my top 100 every year. I would say it's even in my top 50.
Oh, okay.
So I highly recommend it. The original game, the Manhattan Project, was all about bombs and dropping bombs. Mm-hmm. So this was kind of like they already created a game and they were like, but if you put it under this title, we could sell more. And it's like, But it's basically, it has this really cool mechanic, Chris, where you want to be able to power your country, and your each country has a special ability. But what you decide to power your country with will pollute your country. So there's nuclear, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, nuclear, coal, oil, and I, forgive me if I'm missing some here, but there's also green energy. I think it's wind turbine stuff. And each of those are accompanied by a dye that matches that particular color and that particular power source. So nuclear power is going to give you the most power based on the role, typically, but it's going to be the most dangerous and toxic. Whereas the renewable stuff, least amount of power, but no or little, I think there's nothing toxic to it. Okay. So it's really cool that like your country has a handful of dice that's based on different powers.
The name kept kind of like ringing familiar. And then I just realized, I think someone actually just donated a copy of this to us not too long ago. Yeah.
It's honestly, I 100% agree with Drew. It's one of the best games out there that no one's heard of. It's a good midweight Euro. Lots of ways to build up your tableau. Iconography is very good. It's not military based. You can play with your family and stuff like that. So it's a buy. It's a high recommendation for me as well.
That's awesome.
Don't listen to me. Listen to Drew, because Drew knows who he's talking about.
Maybe I'll try it out before we donate it out.
Yes, you absolutely should. So again, thank you all for submitting for the question of the week. Anthony's going to be away for 3 weeks, so we're going to keep this question up. Please hit us up for the next 2 weeks. Let us know what you played. Give us a sense of what you rate it so we can talk about it on the podcast and get more great games out there. All right, Chris, that's what's going on with everybody out there. So much stuff going on with everyone out there. Let's talk about the stuff we want to talk about. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders. So, Chris, what did you play, or I should say, what do you want to get to the table this week?
Let's see. Getting to the table this week, I'm hoping to get a few games. There's one game that's out on Kickstarter now that I'm particularly interested in, and nice. I wish I could play it. So it's called Sovereign Fall of Wormwood. And this is making me want to play Netrunner.
Oh, no.
Because it seems like it has a lot of very similar mechanics to it, like where you can kind of like search people's hand and deck and discard pile to try to find like key cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been wanting to play Netrunner for so long. Speaking of like now defunct Fantasy Flight Games.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like that's kind of what I've been wanting to play now ever since this started up. It's given me, it's like, I feel like taking out my old collection again, seeing if those decks are still worth playing.
Yeah, 100% agree. And really, it's nice that it brings back those old mechanics and those old feelings to kind of kick you off.
Yeah. Nice. Especially like, it's nice to see like these like mechanics that like Netrunner like was so iconic for.
Yes.
And then there's like, you know, no one's done anything with these mechanics. No one's ever tried to like reinvent them.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be doing a really cool job with it.
The artwork is very cool too. I don't know if it's AI. It looks close to AI.
So from what I saw, apparently like it's part of it is AI, and okay. Then they have artists like go over it.
Sure.
But they do say that they're planning on using AI art for future expansions.
Ooh, okay.
So I don't know if they might change that as time goes on, see if there's any backlash with it.
Sure.
It seems like what they're doing though is just kind of like using AI art as like a to be able to get like art in on people's faces for the Kickstarter. But they're already said that like artists are going to like work over that art afterwards.
Yeah, the AI artwork is always very controversial. And yeah. I mean it seems like every publisher is trying to push their luck a little bit, and I think eventually they're going to break into the market, and we'll just have to accept it.
Yeah. I mean, you already have it. Like a lot of programs that artists are using, mm-hmm. they use AI sure. to some degree. It's more when it's like when the art is entirely AI generated and you don't have an artist behind it.
Sure.
I think that's the bigger issue. So I feel like if I like the fact that they have to kind of disclose now whether the art has been AI generated or not. And I nice. Think that's definitely a good step forward for things like this.
Okay. I hear that. Yeah, I think eventually, like you mentioned, it's just going to be kind of standard. I mean, it's certainly better than the I guess, public domain clip art that Terraforming Mars used when they first came out. Oof, that was a rough one.
Yeah. I feel like I get the like appeal for publishers to be like, use AI art just to be able to get the game in front of people, sure. especially for Kickstarter, where it's like, this game isn't going to see the light of day for another year or so.
Yeah, that gives them time.
So, yeah, so instead of like investing a lot of money and time into art early on, just telling them to be like, get some AI art out there, give them the eye candy, and then so long as they make good on their promise later on that like this isn't going to be like the final art,
sure,
I'm okay with it. But it's more like when the companies do break that promise, well, we've already given them our money on Kickstarter, yes. and you kind of, that's when things get a little iffy. So it hasn't really seemed to happen to anything big yet.
Mm-hmm.
And well, yeah,
it's also hard too, because like I want to back a game because of the art. The art is a very big part of the game. So if you're just showing me placeholder stuff, I mean, they do that a lot with miniatures. So like they give you a 3D rendering of what the miniature looks like. I mean, that happens a lot with those miniature games. So it's always like, but what will it actually look like? And you're like, well, it's a 3D miniature. It's a rendering. And you're like,
But once they put it in the mold and they see, well, the weight's not supported properly, it keeps going. I remember Ankh had a lot of issues with that.
Yes.
Where it was like a couple of the minis that had like spears. In the rendering, it looked one way and they had to completely change the design because it just wasn't balancing properly.
True. All right. Well, if you're interested in that, that is on Kickstarter. So you can get a chance to pick that up. Another Kickstarter game that I'm looking at is Ada's Dream. It's a medium heavy Euro game. It's with a dice rondel. I love myself a rondel. And it's based on Ada Lovelace's first mechanical computer. So way back in the day when computers weren't like the thing that they are now, this brilliant mathematician came out in 1843. Created this analytical engine in order to do these computations. Now you get to be one of her assistants out there, and you're going to be drafting dice, and then they're primarily going to deal with that rondel. Dice are going to move around this rondel, and based upon the different modifications, the arithmetic that goes on as far as where the dice are placed and what dice are higher and lower, it's going to allow you to score particular bonuses. So basically, you have a rondel mechanic and this dual layer punch board, which I always like to see. And then based upon the main rondel and your own particular board and card setup, because you're going to pick up a lot of additional partners and upgrade your actions, you're going to be able to complete, I guess, for lack of a better term, contracts. Here, what we're going to do is complete particular assignments and being able to, you know, you hit those scoring tiles and those program tiles. So it is very old school looking in the best way possible. I don't know if it's AI artwork, but it's very old school. Really cool meeples, really good representation of all these brilliant people back in the day. If you want to pick up a retail version, it's $57, which is a steal these days. And then we go up the chain as far as super deluxe versions are concerned, because now we're looking at $100 if you want all the fancy things and metal coins and mats and stuff like that. But it's currently on Kickstarter. It's from Alley Cat Games, which is a very good company. They do a really good production.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of them. Yeah.
Yes. And you have 18 days at the time of this recording. So July. You got plenty of time until July 3rd if you want to check this out. All right, so that's what's going on in our acquisitions disorders. Chris, let's tell people what we want to hit the table this week, what we did get to play this week, and in particular, how do we rate it? If it gets a buy, we should run out and pick that game up. If it's a play and they should sit down and enjoy it. If it's a dodge and they should avoid it. Or in fact, the game is a dreaded burn and all the AI artwork in the world is not going to save it. Chris, what did you play this week?
So yesterday, actually, I met up with a few friends and we had a little mini board game night.
Oh, very nice.
We started off really, light with, Bonanza and Machikoro.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, just to kind of like get everybody like settled in and waiting for a few more people to show up. And then we, ended the night with Thunder Road Vendetta.
Okay.
And it was the first time I played this at max player count and it was absolutely amazing. It is like racing bumper cars, in a Mad Max themed kind of game. And it was amazing. You were rolling dice. Every turn you're placing dice to move your car. If two cars slam into each other, you roll some more dice to see where they ricochet off to, and then that can cause really fun chain reactions. Sometimes people get bumped off the board. You can kind of lose a card immediately without even realizing it. You could try to bump somebody else off the road and you get bumped off yourself. It was really, really fun. The end of the game kind of dragged a little bit. I think it's just because we focused more on the racing part than trying to eliminate somebody. And so it kind of dragged on a little bit until somebody was like, let's try to shoot at the car in the lead. And then I got blown up. aside from that little hiccup at the end, honestly, this game was amazing. I've played it before at like 2 and 3 players. Mm-hmm. And I was worried if like with too many people, if it would kind of just drag on waiting for your turn. But it was turns go really snappy. You're really just placing one dice, moving a car, and then seeing where things like bounce off to. So like even though it's not your turn, you're always kind of invested in what's happening. I would say this is a huge buy.
Wow, that's excellent. Did you get to play with any of the expansions?
No, I'm waiting for my expansion, the Carnage at Devil's Run.
Oh.
I hear that's like the best expansion. You get to light your car on fire to move faster. You get ramps to jump over people. It just adds like a bit more like extreme and silliness to it.
Yeah.
And I'm all about it. It's light enough that like if you get eliminated really quick, the game's like end trigger comes up, mm-hmm. and so you're only waiting around for maybe another round or two max. So
okay. It's
got a really cool way to like have player elimination. But not with the downside of like, well, I guess I'm sitting here for another hour. It's like, no, I'm just sit there for another 5-10 minutes.
Sure.
The round ends, and then that's the end of the game.
It's got some really great table presence. I've seen this at conventions, and I'm like,
yeah,
not typically my game, but if I saw it at the table and the table's free, I would absolutely play it.
Yeah. I remember going to a convention that we were both at. We were at Level Up. They had a Mario Kart version of Thunder Road that somebody had made.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they had all the Mario Kart characters on there. They had the ramps for their version, mm-hmm. and they gave everybody like their little parachutes to be able to fly across things.
Aww.
I was like, this is amazing, and it was huge. The version they made was massive.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I love the modifications. I mean, this one is a reimplementation of the original Thunder Road. Yeah. So, yeah, the Mario Kart stuff makes so much sense. I wish they'd get involved more in tabletop gaming.
Yeah, that'd be nice to see.
All right, well, Chris, I got a game to the table this week. I got a chance to play it, and that kind of inspired me to actually grab a copy of it from a friend and get it down to the table. Chris, have you played Clank?
Yes, I have played Clank once.
Have you played Clank Catacombs?
No, but I think my family ended up playing it when we had our event with the Girl Scouts.
Okay.
Somebody brought up Clank Catacombs. That was the first time I saw it.
So Clank is a worker placement game and deck builder. These are the same designers, at least for Clank, that you've seen in Dune Imperium. So if you play Dune Imperium, it's worker placement and deck building. If you play Clank, it's worker placement and deck building. The interesting trick or key to the game is that as you are journeying through the dungeon to be able to pick up treasure, you're making noise, or you're making clanks noise throughout the game. So as you do that, you're waking the dragon up. And certain times during the game, a card flips over and it says the dragon wakes up. It goes through a bag full of cubes. So the more noise you make, every noise you make, you put a cube in there. If your cube gets pulled, you take a damage. The whole game is who can get the best treasure and get out before the dragon eats you or eats all the people in there. So I played this, the original version, Clank, a deck building adventure, way, way back. That's 2016. And this one, I played the Acquisitions one. I had played the Space one. And I think even there was the underwater one too, Chris. But this one was new to me at the table and was really interesting about it. Beyond, again, work replacement as far as, and again, it's work replacement in the way that you have a single worker that represents you as a character, and you are going through this dungeon, and as you land on different spots, you'll have an opportunity to heal or take damage or gain special abilities or gain treasure. So it's not a traditional worker placement. It's worker placement kind of alongside with a dungeon crawl, obviously. So the big thing here is there's module tiles. So at the start of the game, you all start off in the same spot. And as you spread out, you take a tile and all the tiles match up appropriately as far as the tunnels are concerned. You decide how are you going to connect the next tile to the tunnel, and then you move through that tunnel tile. Again, things happen. There's bad guys you have to fight in order to get through the tunnel. There's movements you have to make. All of the things that you need to do in order to journey through the dungeon, you'll get from the cards that you have initially based on your character and cards that you pick up from the market. So that's a pretty fun concept just throughout. And I think having experienced the new tiles that come out and having some power over how the adventure kind of plays out made the game for me even more fun. Clank, just the basic version, was kind of a play. But this new version with the tiles, and I also play with the expansion too. So with the expansion alongside the base here, you got to play with asymmetric player powers. So, and I think you'll appreciate this, Chris, one of the characters you can play at is the cat. And there's a little cat miniature in the game, and the cat has its own special cat powers, and you get special cards that go along with that particular character cat. The other ones are like, I think there's a wizard, there's a robot Clank kind of automaton, which is kind of broke in the game, but we won't talk about that too much. it's a fairly good game. The only downside I would say for it, because of the addition of the tiles, is it does slow the game down. So what might be typically, at least in the original version of the game, like an hour and a half, now you're playing two and a half hour games, again, based upon how many players you're playing and how many different things you could do, because you can unlock things, you can heal yourself, you can put more Clank in the bag, you can pick cards from the market, you can get rid of cards from your hand. Like, there's a lot. So I would certainly say that Clank Catacombs is still a play from the original Clank, but higher. I'd be willing to invest more time in Clank Catacombs with the expansion than I would with the original Clank. Both took a lot of time. This takes a little bit more time, but I did enjoy it. So it gets play for me.
So then I guess the question is, like, if you already have a Clank,
oh, good
question, do you think it's worth getting Catacombs?
I would say no.
And then what if you have no Clank, would you recommend Catacombs above anything else?
That's a hard one. It's hard because I think time investment now more and more these days is really what is getting to people. Yes. All right. I'm going to say yes there, Chris. I think that's
okay.
I think if you're going to purchase a Clank version, I think the fact that the board's module allows for more, you know, different types of playthroughs. Now, if you're interested in the legacy version, the Acquisitions Incorporated, that's a whole separate thing. And again, you have to be really into that. But again, there's the space, there's Sunken Treasure, there's Mummy Curse, there's a lot of versions of this.
I guess the last question is, yeah. Oh, sorry, go.
No, yeah.
I was saying, if the last question is then, does the space version have a space dragon? What are you waking up
with
the Clanks in space?
Yeah, there's kind of a space dragon. There's a space monster in there.
Okay.
I will say, I'm both a fantasy fan, but also a sci-fi fan, the space version kind of leans into the sci-fi parodies a lot more, and cards chain together based upon the factions that you pick up. So if you play Dune Imperium, you kind of get that, like the Bene Jesuit cards kind of, you know, go together, and the Fredman cards go together. I would say the space one is a little more gamer-ish, a little more complex-ish as far as that's concerned. The base game is a little more basic, but I think Catacombs is a nice middle of the road, especially with the expansion.
Cool.
All right, so that's all the games we got to the table this week. Now, on to our feature review. So our feature review this week, we are talking awards. Chris, last year, these all happened on separate weeks. this week, they all happened at the same time. So I think we're going to be talking awards for the next couple of weeks. But Origins Awards came out and Spiel des Jahres Awards came out. So we have a multitude of different award nominees, which I think is really cool because these are great games that you may or may not have heard about. And again, we need to let you know about great games. So, Chris, let's talk about Spiel des Jahres nominations for 2024. These are the German Game of the Year awards. And I think broadly, it's accepted as the game awards. If you win one of these awards, or sometimes if you're nominated for these awards, your game blows up, right? Like people just...
Yeah.
You know, go, German knows board games. I mean, that's just what it is. So
you also end up getting like the box next year that comes out where it says like, I've been nominated for the Spiel or I won the Spiel.
Yes. Now, we will say one thing. I mean, Anthony, I say this every year, Chris. They're certainly lighter. These are more family gateway kind of type games.
Yeah, I think their view is more, well, I guess also because Germany, like, board games is a bit more of like a bigger thing.
Yes.
So it kind of makes more sense that like the games that they have are a bit more for like wider audiences.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So like you're not going to see your like Ark Novas here or your like Dune Imperiums. Those aren't the games that usually make the Spiel.
Which was funny because I think a lot of people did think those games would get there. But again, it has to be produced in Germany. There has to be copies out in Germany. And it's typically based on having a quality rule book, which, again, absolutely needed. So Spiel des Jahres is typically the gateway game, family game category, straight up. So this year, Chris, I guess maybe we should mention some of the recommendations that didn't get to the nominations. Harmonies, which is a very nice abstract game. Pass Nicht, which I'm not familiar with. I think it's a German game. Phantom Inc., which I think I did play at one of the conventions, which is okay. Kind of like a party game. I'm going to butcher this. Please forgive me. Schnetz it if you can. again, I've not played that. Trekking Through History, which I like a lot. It's a really good kind of gateway family game. And finally, Trio, which is also another good game. But those did not make the final nominations. So the nominations this year were, first up, Captain Flip. Chris, you know Captain Flip. You're a big Flip fan, right?
Oh, yeah. Me and Captain Flip go out every year for a cruise. Like, you know.
And you never invite me. I'm really upset.
It's a very small ship.
Yeah, I'm personally not familiar with this. It looks kind of, I don't think this is even out in the US. I have not seen this anywhere. I don't think it has. Yeah, no, I don't see anybody yet from like a US publisher that is carrying this game locally. But obviously it's a game where once per turn, you draw a tile from the bag, you like it, you keep it, you don't, you flip it, and then you place it on your board to form your crew. So a very family kind of base game where you're placing tiles to score points or to avoid negative points. And there's a lot of cool kind of pirate ships and cartoony artwork that are, you know, it's a pirate game.
Yeah. So what I think is really cool about this one though is it is very like multiplayer solitaire.
Sure.
Like you're not interacting with each other too much. Mm-hmm. Where like what the game is like you pull that tile, like you said, and then whatever side you pull that tile on, you either choose to keep that one, or if you want to flip it to the other side, you're forced to keep the other side of the tile.
Yes. So some pressure luck.
And then a lot of the tiles depend on like what placement. Like this tile wants to be the highest one in its row. This one wants to be next to another kind of tile. So like every single tile has its own different kind of scoring, which is really nice.
Yeah.
But it is really just like pull a tile, flip a tile, pull a tile, flip a tile, and then you just kind of keep going until, like, I think it's like a two thirds of your ship is like filled, and then like the game is over.
Yeah, it's a very abstract game. You can play this on Board Game Arena. So if you like to check that out, very low complexity, very family weight game, just has some kind of cute artwork in the background. So the first nominee here. Next up is In the Footsteps of Darwin. This was something that did get over to the US, did get a chance to demo this. I think it was at PAX.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris, have you got a chance? Do you know anything about this game?
I looked it up. I remember hearing about this one, but I never actually played it before.
Oh, okay.
But we were talking about before where it was it reminded me a lot of Waffle Time.
Yes.
Just the way that you end up like picking things up similar in that similar like 3x3 grid.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very simple, again, it's tile drafting game with a bit of set collection. Generally your point salad kind of thing. And again, based on Darwin's journey. So a lot of beautiful animal tiles and flora and fauna tiles, I should probably say. So very very laid back, easy game. Definitely could play with the kids. I think Anthony played with his kids and enjoyed it. Production's very good. A very nice looking game.
Yeah, it looks visually, it looks really, really nice.
Yeah.
I like the little, like, your playmat is actually like a book that you like fold and open up.
Yes. And this is from the game company Sorry We're French. So, which is, I think it's a great name. I mean, beautiful artwork, beautiful illustrations in the game, nice production, good iconography. Definitely something to check out, for sure.
Yeah.
And then finally, from the Spiel des Jahres, one of the probably the most popular games, at least in the US, Sky Team.
This is probably my, like, pick for game of the year last year, honestly.
Yeah.
Like what a game. We have been playing this. I think we played this week actually. There's just something so cool about the dice placement.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of games where like you can't communicate with your partner when you're playing co-op, and like this is one of them. But like the order that you have to play your dice in, how many like balls you have to juggle, you have to make sure you're moving fast enough or slow enough depending on certain airports they have you go to. You have to clear traffic out, you have to make sure your plane is leveled, your brakes are out, your braking gear is out, your flaps are open. Like there's so many things that you have to get done, and like just trying to kind of plan that all out is a really cool puzzle to do.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen a lot of this. I have not gotten to this table yet, so.
Oh, next time we meet up, then I have to bring Sky Team.
Nice.
You have to try this out. It's so good.
The only question I would have for this award, is it too complex for that kind of gateway family game?
No, because you notice like, the game is mostly language independent.
Okay.
There are a few ability cards that you get that have text on it.
Sure.
But like the gameplay is very, very simple. It really is roll dice, and then you have your half of the board to place them on, and then your teammate has their half of the board to place them on.
Nice.
Everything is color-coded to your player. You know, the icons are always very clear. You're never... Because it like certain times, as you get to like the more like difficult airports that they want you to go to, certain ones are timed. And so like everything ends up being very, very clear when you're looking down at the board. The one weird thing is that it's the first time I've ever seen a game that makes you create the dual layered boards.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes like all unfolded, and you actually have to apply the stickers and fold everything into itself to make the dual layered boards, which was really weird the first time I saw it.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm down with that for sure. So I'm assuming then, Chris, Sky Team, your pick for the Spiel des Jahres?
Oh yes, definitely.
Okay. I'm going to go in Footsteps of Darwin just because I think it might be a little bit more to their speed. But if Captain Flip wins, I don't know where we're doing, man. Like, it's fine. It's fine. We'll
give Captain Flip to Anthony.
Yeah, he gets the Captain Flip choice. So I don't know. Like, thank you, Barry. And then next up, we should mention the Kenner Spiel. This is the games that are considered a little more heavy, a little more complex gamer games, again, sometimes you see, you know, medium weight or lightweight Euros in this kind of category typically don't get chosen. This year, we have some interesting choices. We have Daybreak. Chris, any feel, any play for this?
So I know it's Matt Leacock,
yeah.
From he's done Pandemic, yes. And this looks very similar to that. Mm-hmm. Looks like he kind of just took that formula and adapted it to a different theme. Personally, I really like Daybreak. I haven't played it, but just like looking at it, the board looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I love the colors. I absolutely love the theme. Where you're trying to like get all the countries to like lower their carbon footprint,
sure,
to make sure the temperature of the planet doesn't get too warm. If you start the game and no countries improve their like carbon output, you collectively lose the game in 4 turns,
yes,
because it just heats up the planet so quickly. And what I think is really cool is the cards that you play, a lot of them are like green initiatives. And they actually have QR codes that you can scan.
Nice.
And it will bring you to the website for an organization that is working on that kind of initiative.
Wow.
Which I think is like such a cool thing to add. Because I really like when games like have like flavor text or anything like that that's on it. Like, yes. I eat that up. But this is like this real life flavor text. You know, like you get to actually see like the cards that you're playing, like what it actually has like an impact on real life. Which is really, really cool.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, certainly very gripping as far as like the look of it and also the co-op building to deal with climate change. So it's fun. I really like that idea. It's a new take on that climate change thing, which is out there in a lot of games, but I think this is a new version of it. So I'm really excited.
Yeah.
I
think he's the right designer for a game like this too.
Oh,
like, you know, absolutely. They're trying to. Yeah, like what way to pick a perfect designer to have a game where it's like we all need to work together to like make sure the planet doesn't burn.
Sure. Also up is the Guild of Merchant Explorers. I have not played this. Have you played this, Chris?
Neither have I. Nope.
Yeah. So again, I think this is in fact out here in the US. And again, you're sailing across the sea as merchants. And you're trying to connect your kind of your exploration, because it's all about hidden victory points and network and route building. So definitely up my alley. Just I haven't seen this anywhere at the table. And this has been out for a while now. I think this is new in Germany.
Okay.
So. And then finally here, a game that we probably know in some version or the other. Ticket to Ride Legacy, Legends of the West.
I was really surprised by that. I really didn't expect to see this game, because I feel like early reviews were kind of like, it's okay. It's nothing too amazing. And for like you said before, like rule books are like a big thing for the spiel, that I feel like legacy rule books tend to be very convoluted. They tend to be really hard to kind of work your way through. So I'm really surprised to see this one here. Matt Leacock again here for a second time.
Yeah, he's everywhere here. And it makes a lot of sense. I have not played this. Again, like you said, Chris, I have heard good things about it. I just wondered at the time when it first came out, like, there's so many Ticket to Rides out there. Was it kind of burnt out? Was it played out?
I feel like now that they started doing a lot of small box Ticket to Rides, it kind of helped that burnout like come a bit.
Sure.
Because now it's just like you have like Ticket to Ride London, San Francisco, Amsterdam. Like, it's a lot of smaller box ones that are just kind of like pick your flavor. So it didn't feel like it was really like inundating everybody with new Ticket to Rides. And then this big box, which I remember the price was really expensive, yes, for a Ticket to Ride game.
And I think that was, I mean, for me personally, about picking it up, this was a game that I could get to the table with my family, but I've played so many versions of this. I wasn't sure. It's the hard part of legacy games. Like, should I pick this up if I already own the mechanic in other versions? Because I don't want to spend $100 on this if it's just the same.
And it's also like, do you really want to lock yourself in for 12 games of Ticket to Ride?
Yes.
Like, yeah, especially like now where it's like maybe a little bit less so now for legacy games, but campaign games are everywhere. So when you buy a game like that, you're pretty much trying to lock yourself in for quite a few runs of this.
Sure.
And I don't know if Ticket to Ride is quite the game I would want to lock myself in for 12 runs.
Same. So what are you thinking here, Chris, as far as the Kender spiel?
My vote goes to Daybreak.
Same. I agree.
Yeah.
100%. And then finally, probably not so much for our audience here, the Kinderspiel. The kids out there, the children's games. Chris, you know one of these games out there at least.
Yes, I am very excited about Taco Kitten Pizza.
Yes.
This is the little kid version of Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And this game has come very close to my heart.
Aww.
We have played it a lot at our game day events with kids.
Yes.
And there's very few things that bring me more joy than having a group of kids scream at the top of their lungs, Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza. So like now knowing that there's going to be a more kid accessible version of it.
Version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited for this.
I'm going to go along with this too. And we don't even have to talk about the other ones because we know it's Taco Cat Pizza, right? There's nothing else out there. Don't even bother.
And the art is so cute on it.
It's true. All right. Well, Spilis Yaris nominations are out there. Check out all of those games. And if you have any interest, you might want to pick those games up before they get purchased, because once the awards happen, they usually go out of stock for a while.
Yeah.
All right, well, that leaves us to our Origins Awards. The Origins Game Fair is coming up next week, and they have just announced their Origin Game Awards. This has been a award ceremony kind of thing that Anthony and I probably enjoyed more than any other, just because it's had so much intrigue and wackiness as far as the categories are concerned over the years. And then recently, over the last couple of years, they revised it to sound more industry. If there is such a word, and it's gotten boring, I gotta be honest with you, because it's a lot more straight laced and it's like, this is the thing. I'm like, yes, you're right, this is just straight up the thing. So no longer are you going to have a joint category with party games, children games, and family games. They got their act straightened up, and we got a lot of great games here. So starting us off here, Chris, best cooperative board game. We mentioned one of these before, so let's mention it again. Sky Team is up there. Yep. We have Sail. We have Kinfire 12. We have Tales from the Red Dragon Inn, which is their co-op version. And we have Tesseract from Smirk and Dagger Games, which is their co-op game with a giant Tesseract or cube of little tiny cube dice, which we just recently reviewed. It was actually a lot of fun. Have you played any of these, Chris?
I have Sail, Sky Team, and Tesseract.
Oh,
and
okay.
If I had to rate them all, I would say buy for those easily.
Oh, nice.
So Sail, really, really nice artwork. Great production.
Yes.
A very, very difficult co-op trick-taking game, which there aren't many that I feel like kind of hit this niche.
Yes.
But Sail is amazing. It's just you have to be okay knowing that you're going to lose a lot of games when you're playing Sail.
Gotcha. Yeah. And again, All Play really upped their game too. Like, they're producing a lot of tiny little games that are excellent. So yeah. A lot of good people here. Yeah. It's kind of hard to pick. As you mentioned, all of these are very good. If you had to pick one, Chris, which would it be?
I feel like Sky Team, but if it wasn't for that one, I would probably put it for Sail.
Okay. I'm going to go with Sky Team here because I've seen it played. I wish I got a chance to play Tales from the Red Dragon Inn because I played their other game, but I think Sky Team is so unique and so streamlined in their co-op gameplay that I still want to play it and I still haven't played it. I still have a strong acquisition disorder for a game that I've only seen at a distance. Next up, best gateway board game. We have Junk Draw, Prehistory's Evolutions, Gap, Wandering Towers, and Jomok, The Winter Market. Chris, have you played any of these wonderful games?
I played and have Wandering Towers.
It is
a really cool game that I think was one of the biggest surprises for me last year. It's a really cool like a cup game, like you would play in the street, like Where's the Lady, and they're shuffling cups all over. It's like you're trying to like make sure that you don't lose track of your wizards and other people's wizards, and you're trying to, everyone's trying to get their wizards into this like one special black tower. And every time you cover someone's any wizard, you get to fill up a potion. Mm-hmm. So once you filled up all your potions and you've got all your wizards in the black tower, then you've won the game. And it's a really, really cool game to play. Yeah, I would definitely recommend that one.
Nice. I unfortunately haven't played any of these. You were playing Wandering Towers where I was playing something else, which I don't remember at the time. I'm trying to think what it was. But nonetheless, Anthony is a huge fan of Junk Draw, which is a tile laying game where players organize polyominoes in a quote unquote junk draw. And then each tile represents different items. What I really like about the game from a visual perspective is that they really did go out of their way to find items that actually match the polyominoes. Unlike Feast for Odin, which had food and items be random shapes, which it still annoys me to this day. So when you actually finish Junk Draw, it does look like as if you really did manage to properly organize things in your draw. So
yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's like the tape measure actually fits the shape they put it in.
I know, isn't that cool?
They have like the watch, chip clips, someone's inhaler.
Yes, very cool.
Yeah, no, the shapes really fit it. Yeah,
I love that. All right, next up is Best Light Strategy Game. We have Match of the Century, Three Ring Circus, Cosmo Octopus, In the Footsteps of Darwin, and Leaf. Chris, what have you played? Any of these?
So I haven't played any of these. Leaf has been on my like want list for a while.
Yes.
And it seeing it on here, I was really surprised. Like, oh, I thought this came out years ago, but be really surprised that it was only last year.
Yes.
I feel like the art in Leaf is really, really cool. I'm really a big fan of it. Anything nature theme always kind of grabs me. I feel like that's definitely the game out of these that I'm most interested in.
I'm gonna give you two answers here, because one is one of my most anticipated games that I just have not found a copy despite my best efforts. That's Match of the Century from Capstone Games. It is the spiritual successor to Watergate. Chris, have you played Watergate?
No, I keep hearing how it's like one of the best two-player games.
Okay, Chris, here's the thing. It's one of the best two-player games out there. I'm just saying. Oh. Yeah, it's definitely. This is Match of the Century. It's about the World Championship, the World Chess Championship, and in Rekia. And you had Bobby Fischer, and it's everything that I guess that they did in Watergate as far as a two-player game where you're picking cards to determine what actions you could take on the board, and you fight back and forth, you counter each other. But here, it's actually with chess pieces on the board. It's not a chess board. It's a little different. So I would think that probably would be one if I could actually get this to the table.
So, all right, you're telling me that this is a board game.
Yes.
About a board game.
Yes. an amazing moment in tabletop gaming.
So it's trying to like recreate a specific match.
Yes. Well, it's you're playing a game over a series of games.
Okay.
So that's how the championship plays out. You play multiple games throughout, but each of the games are very short. This is not chess championships. This is a different game. This is not you playing chess. You're playing cards that mimic the different actions, and you have asymmetric decks. So you're able to kind of counter and try to outthink each other. So very much like Watergate. So this probably will, if I ever get a chance to play it. I don't know. I haven't played it yet. But if I have to put my money on a thing just because it's played so well, again, In the Footsteps of Darwin, it's a Spinos Yaris nominee, man. I'm just saying. So sorry we're French. Don't be sorry. You're doing great, man. I love this game. Next up is Best Thematic Board Game. We have Kinfire Chronicles, Nightfall. We have Distilled, Freelancers, a Crossroads game. Thunder Road Vendetta, sounds familiar. And finally, The Shifting Dark. Chris, I know you played at least one of these.
Yeah, we just talked about Thunder Road Vendetta. Mm-hmm. That's definitely my pick for here. I've been wanting to play Distilled. I really am interested in the theme. Heard the production of it. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely looking forward to trying that. And Kinfire Chronicles, I haven't heard of it before, but this is the second one that's popped up, and it's a different one than that was in the co-op.
Yes.
So I wonder if this is like different expansions for Kinfire.
Hmm. Yeah, I will also say, again, these are really cool games. And again, we're looking at thematics, right? So
yeah,
a lot of these games bring it to the table. I played Distilled a lot. We reviewed it. You can play it on Board Game Arena, Chris, if you haven't.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
it's just take more advantage of Board Game Arena.
Yeah, it's on beta, so it may not be perfect, but at least it's somewhat playable. The Shifting Dark is really interesting because it's all about the light that you cast off from your light source to kind of figure things out. I mentioned already, I've not played Thunder Road Vendetta, but it always looks amazing at the table. All of these games are very thematic. I think Distilled is not as heavy and complicated as it looks, but it really has a good table presence and theme. I said it before, I have to go with just what has happened to me as playing these games. Thunder Road Vendetta, Chris, I think, again, not my theme, would not normally play it, but I've seen it and I want to play it. And I think if it's going to be a thematic board game, it's got to draw you in. And I think that draws me in.
I feel like it is as close as you can get to Mad Max, the board game.
Yes.
Just like how like Nemesis was as close as you can get to Aliens.
Yes, it's true.
So I feel like they got the theme really, really down for Thunder Road.
True. All right, next up is Best Heavy Strategy Game. We have Age of Innovations, Ark Nova Marine Worlds, Kuntahora, The City of Silver, Dune Imperium Uprising, and The Search for Lost Species. Have you played any of these, Chris?
So I have, and this is a weird entry, Ark Nova Marine Worlds.
Yes.
It's an expansion. It's not a game.
Why?
Yeah, so I guess that kind of goes back also to Kinfire, where are these games or are these expansions?
Yes.
But that's the only one I've played out of these, but I will say this is pretty much my want list from the last couple of months, sure, all in one nice little list. I've heard nothing but great things about Kuntahora. Mm-hmm. I really liked Dune Imperium. I've heard nothing but good things about Uprising, that it's just pretty much a strict upgrade.
Yes.
The Search for Lost Species is a re-implementation of Search for Planet X,
yes,
which I've really wanted to try. And Age of Innovation, I've heard also really good things about it.
Yeah, that's also a re-implementation as well.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. You're doing some terraforming, man.
Oh.
Yeah. So, they've done a very good job. I mean, Capstone Games has done a really good job kind of, you know, utilizing and protecting their products, but also kind of developing them out. So if you play Terra Mystica, then you've played Age of Innovation, but it's obviously stripped out the kind of fantasy theme. Mm-hmm. Gaia Project is also one of the kind of re-implementations.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, so this would be the third re-implementation of Terra Mystica then?
Technically the fourth. There's another lighter version that came out, which is slipping my mind. It might be
they made that Terra Nova. Like Jaws of the Lion. Yeah, it's like the Jaws of the Lion version for Gloomhaven. Like that's their version for Terra Mystica.
Yeah, Terra Nova, I think is the name. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's a thing. I think a lot of people are gonna be voting Dune Imperium Uprising.
Yeah,
which is also,
I think that takes it for this.
Which again is also just a re-implementation of Dune Imperium.
Yeah.
So like it should be best re-implementation or expansion, because that's really what it is. So
yeah, it's really strange. You know what? I would put my vote for Kuntahora.
Okay.
I think Dune Imperium is going to win it, but I feel like Kuntahora is the only game here that's not an expansion,
yes,
not a re-implementation. It's going to be doing its own brand new thing.
Yes.
So I give that my vote.
I feel that. I do. I think if I'm... Yeah, and I also agree with you, Chris. I think if what's going to win is just... the power of Dune Imperium is just going to win out here.
Yeah. And for good reason. The it's a really solid game. And the fact that Uprising just kind of like fine-tuned it.
Oh, yeah.
It's essentially Dune Imperium 2nd Edition is really what it ends up being.
Again, like, this could have been a really different category about re-implementations, because we just mentioned all the other ones. Even Ark Nova Marine World, which is an expansion.
And they're not afraid of adding very, very specific categories that we'll see later on.
Yeah, these are all very enjoyable games, so I don't think you can go wrong, so I'm happy to see that. Next up is Best Party Social Board Game. Turns out, okay. We have Fiction here, Ensemble, CDSK, Inside Job, and of course, Smug Owls.
I love the name Smug Owls.
Isn't that great?
I feel like the only one from here that I've heard of and I'm interested in playing is Fiction.
Sure.
And again, All Play, like you said, has been coming out with like really good small box games. And this is definitely one of them.
Again, all kind of cool games. I think the one you mentioned, just because of the title, Smug Owls. Again, it's one of those kind of party games where you just kind of social games, you have to go along with it. But in this one, you're creating riddles based upon the deck that comes out. So it can, you know, and your answer could be funny or it could be profound. It gives you that kind of sense of like, it could be a joke, but also it could be thoughtful and deep. So
that's pretty cool.
I like that idea that it's not just a one trick pony. You can go hardcore with it. And then next up is Best Solo Board Game. There's only a couple of choices here, which is odd, but I appreciate it. Resist, 20 Strong, and Legacy of You.
I feel like the only one I've been interested in playing out of these, and I'm not a big solo player, but 20 Strong is the only one that I've been interested out of these.
Yeah, I think Anthony himself has played all of these games, and I think we've reviewed all of these games at one point or the other. Legacy of You is quite a big game. I generally like that kind of game because it kind of matches that kind of Euro mechanic. But if I'm thinking, honestly, to be honest with you, if I'm thinking solo board game, I'm probably thinking of Resist, because the theme that goes along with it, really, when you play a solo board game, you really have to create your own fun. like you know, when you have other people at the table, you are committed. When you're playing a solo board game, you're like, I don't know, I could stop at any time, it's not a big deal. So yeah. I really need a solo game to kind of draw me in. So Spain, 1936, General Franco and his troops advance across the territories of Spain, giving way to a long period of civil war and repression. Got me, right? And it's fast pace, it's solitaire kind of game. And again, it's about, you know, fighting the different regimes there. You have to make decisions if you're going to play cards or people or agents as part of the resistance towards their special effect, that one-time thing, or you're going to keep them going on along with you, giving you a lesser effect. So I like that kind of management as far as that goes. And it's also been re-implemented as Witchcraft, which I think is also a game Anthony has, another solo game.
See, for me, when it comes to solo games, my number one priority for it has to be very small.
Okay.
It has to be very portable.
Gotcha.
I feel like that's what makes me really want to get 20 Strong. Because, like, when I think, like, what's the solo game I would want to bring around? Right now, it's probably Palm Laboratory.
Okay.
And it's just because it I can carry it with me anywhere. I can play it anywhere. And I feel like it's really hard to kind of compete in that space for me, where it's just like, I don't want big, heavy solo games.
Sure.
I want very light filler games when I'm waiting for, you know, someone else to get to the table.
Gotcha. I hear you. That's the place it plays for you.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. And finally, we'll talk about detail is best children's and family board games. You had Chris here. You have Cranium Hullabaloo, Diced Vegetables, Turbo Kids, One Too Many Rabbits, and Sushi Boat.
I feel like Diced Veggies is probably the one I'm most interested in here.
Yes.
I'm trying to think if I played One Too Many Rabbits. Let me see.
Diced Veggies is definitely one that's been out there, because I remember getting that to the table. Sushi Boat, definitely gotten that table. Turbo Kids, I don't remember if I've actually played that or not. I'm going to say no.
Okay.
So, a lot of cool games. Again, from the ones I've played, because again, Turbo Kids is going to be a roll and write kind of thing, or, you know, you're rolling on the right on the track here. Diced Vegetables was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So
it's that's like the one where you kind of like you actually have like a cleaver in the game. You get to like chop down and like separate the dice.
Yeah, and I think if you're gonna play a kid's game, it needs to be something very physically present and something that matches what their abilities are, and that works really
something
well.
Something with dexterity that like it's not a dexterity game, but like it's something that you actually have to interact with the game.
True.
That kids are gonna be like, ooh, like I get to chop the cubes up.
Excellent. All right, Chris, we're going to speed run the rest because it's not much board game tabletop games as much. So there's also best fixed constructible game. I'm sorry. I understand it's an industry standard term. I hate that category type. I have friends who play Flesh and Blood, and of course, everyone plays Magic the Gathering. So those are things. Best randomized collectible card game. Again.
No. Best randomized constructible card game.
I'm sorry. I said the thing that I think it should have been instead of what it literally said. Why? Why are you doing constructible? That's not a word we use. But
these categories, I think, is really like we spoke about it before to make spoof categories.
Yeah.
That's what this. Seeing these makes me really want to have like best fish of 2024. Like, I would really love to see categories like that.
I get it. It fits your industry type. It fits a sheet somewhere, a spreadsheet somewhere. It's fine. I don't like it. I don't like it. So there. Best miniatures game product. There's Marvel Crisis, Star Wars Shatterpoint, Conquest, and Dungeons & Dragons Onslaught. So that's a thing. Best puzzle game. Mother of Frankenstein, Exit, and Threads of Fate.
I do like exit games. I will say,
yeah.
If you haven't tried one,
oh, no.
Spend the $10. People haven't tried it, go to Barnes & Noble, pick one up for $10, give them a shot. They're really fun.
Okay. Best role-playing game adventure. There's a bunch of cool stuff from Doctor Who to Lord of the Rings. Best role-playing game core product. Star Trek Adventures Captain Logs is the one that I have, so I'm going to recommend that. But there's also Marvel Multiverse and Avatar Legends and other such games.
Wait, can we read this one off, though? The Devil's Dandy Dogs.
Yeah, that's a thing. Although there's also another game called Die, in all capitals, D-I-E.
Yeah.
The role-playing game, in case you forgot. And then next, there's Best Role-Playing Game Starter Product. Okay. That's a thing. Best role-playing game supplement. Really kind of nitty-gritty here.
They're digging deep for these.
Yes. Here's one. Best dice. Okay, fair. Dice-related accessory. So
the fact that they combine that to one category. They're like dice and dice accoutrements.
Now, I think this is the thing. Best game accessory. I mean... Okay.
I looked up what one of them was because I saw Frame-a-Majigs.
Yes.
And I was like, what the heck could this be? And it's a frame to put your frame, like magic cards and stuff in.
Sure.
And their picture is literally a black lotus being framed into a Frame-a-Majig.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. But that I wouldn't even call that a board game accessory because it's you're framing a card. Yeah. It's not an accessory to the board game.
I don't say it, but. You know, you got to be in it. You got to be in Gamma to get in these categories. Best role-playing game related accessory? Not really. All right. Best 2D artwork? Okay. Best 3D component? Best game related writing. I'm not really sure what that is. And finally, best media production. There you are, my friends. If you're a Gamma member, you're on this list. You are one of the people who nominated, voted, and could be nominated and voted and also voted. So we'll follow up with the award winners and hopefully they change some of the category names so that they're not so esoteric for the rest of us out there to figure out what exactly they're saying or why. But it's typically a good awards ceremony. It's a lot of good games there. So again, not as impactful as the Spiel's Jahres, but again, if you heard about some games that you like or want to check out, again, the Origins Game Awards are a good place to start to get some great games. And Origins is next week. So check it out, have fun, and if you're there, hit us up. All right, everyone. So that's everything for this week. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Chris.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Good night.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.